This evening we're going to be discussing a section from Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is 11th Canto, Chapter 21, Text 2. You have your little devices, you like to look and read the purports and all those things. Uddhava is pictured here amongst the associates of Krishna. According to Brihat Bhagavatamrita and other transcendental sources, outside of Vrindavan, of course nobody compares to those within Vrindavan, Uddhava will tell you, but outside of Vrindavan, the most intimate associate of Krishna. Arjuna was Krishna's dearmost friend, we know that. And Yudhisthira and Kunti and so many intimate associates of Krishna, but the superlative amongst them all is Uddhava. This is a portrayal of Uddhava's understanding, because he knew Krishna's heart, that Krishna was going to end his pastimes and leave this world. In fact, Krishna told him, "My dear Uddhava, my pastimes are now completed. I'm going to depart." So Uddhava is beside himself with grief and anxiety and anticipation of separation from Krishna. This is a scene in Dwarka. But Krishna, with exhibiting his love for Uddhava, but also his opulence of renunciation, he instructs Uddhava to take shelter after he leaves. It's going to be, Kali Yuga is going to begin, it's going to get difficult, and it's getting more difficult and more difficult and more difficult. So take shelter of the devotees of the Lord, especially the devotees of Narayan, Rishi in the north country. Go there. So Uddhava didn't want to go, but Uddhava didn't want to say no either. He didn't want to say yes, he didn't want to say no. Finally he went. But he was feeling such separation from Krishna. Uddhava's features are described as so close to Krishna that when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, the gopis thought it was Krishna had come to Vrindavan. And they were a little disappointed when it wasn't Krishna. But they understood that he must be so dear to Krishna, even looks like Krishna. He's Krishna's dearmost associate. They could understand intuitively. So he tried following Krishna's instruction. He didn't get too far. He went back to Dwarka, looking for Krishna. When he went to Dwarka, Krishna had gone. Dearmost devotee of, this is like the gopis, searching madly after Krishna. So he went searching madly after Krishna somewhere on the planet. Hopefully, maybe he's gone back already. He was in such anxiety. And searching and searching and searching and searching. And there's such a beautiful description in the beginning of the third canto, chapter 1, in a forest. Imagine if you went for a walk in Gitanagari and you saw Krishna in the forest. You have to really desire to see Krishna, for Krishna to show himself like he did to Uddhava. And there he saw Krishna resting, reclining, leaning back on a young banyan tree. And here, as the painting illustrates, he was exhibiting his feature of four arms with his yellow dhoti and his long arms reaching down to his knees. And Uddhava ran and ran and ran and fell at Krishna's feet and poured out his heart to Krishna. I found you. You're so merciful. You allowed me to find you, and I couldn't follow your instruction. I was too much attached to you. And then Krishna instructed Uddhava in detail, did his dear friend Arjuna. Only it's not recorded in the third canto, it's recorded in the 11th canto. And that section of the 11th canto is called Uddhava Gita. And the verse that we're going to be discussing is from Uddhava Gita, and it's a different one that we chanted before. That's tomorrow morning's verse. This personality over here is Maitreya. As you can see, he's much elder. And he happened to be in the audience hearing Krishna speak Uddhava Gita. And so now we'll try again. Here's 11th canto, chapter 21, text number 2. Sve sve dikare ya nishtha, saguna parikirtita, viparyayas tu doshasyad, ubhayor esha nishchayaha. Translation is steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas devotion from one's position is considered, deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. Krishna's speaking to Uddhava. And so now we're going to read the verse, the purport, 11:21-2. Okay. In the previous verse, this is purport. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained that the path of spiritual progress, that's our topic, right? Part of our topic is making progress after accepting our position and then making further progress. So, in the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained that the path of spiritual progress begins with working without fruitive desires. That's a nice beginning. Have any of you begun devotional service? Any of you without material desires? Without material desires? Then one advances to the stage of realized spiritual knowledge and culminates in direct engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. Here, the Lord emphasizes that a conditioned soul should not artificially disrupt the natural evolution of his Krishna consciousness by deviating from those duties prescribed by the Lord himself. Then it covers basically the yoga ladder. Lord Krishna explains in this verse that one who is still attached to the material body and mind cannot artificially give up the prescribed duties of karma yoga, meaning the karma sannyas program. In the same way, one who is a spiritual neophyte, just beginning to realize the illusion of material life, should not artificially try to think of the Lord's intimate pastimes 24 hours a day, imitating the stage of prema bhakti. Rather, she goes through the progressive stages. Back two chapters, in chapter 19 of this canto, verse 45, Lord Krishna states, guna dosha drishir dosho gunas tribhuya varjita. One should not see material good and evil within a devotee of the Lord. Indeed, one becomes pious by giving up such mundane conceptions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that occasionally a neophyte devotee may be polluted by association with those enthusiastically executing fruitive activities and mental speculation. Such a devotee's religious activities may be affected by mundane tendencies. Similarly, an ordinary person who observes the exalted status of a pure devotee sometimes externally imitates the devotee's activities, considering himself to be on the same exalted platform of a pure devotee. I know some individuals like that. These imperfect practitioners of bhakti yoga are not exempt from criticism, since their fruitive activities, mental speculation, and false prestige are material intrusions in the pure, loving service of the Lord. He's indicating there's the progressive stages. Observing according to one's adhikarna. This verse, of the favorite verses, just like Prabhupada had his favorite verses, it's one of the favorite verses, or often quoted verses, of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, describing, what our topic is. Here's our topic. How to remain enthusiastic despite the gap between where we stand spiritually and where we would like to be. There's a gap. So there's two parts of what I'm going to be speaking this evening. There's a vast gap between what we know and where we presently are at, how to close that gap. So this verse is addressing the how to close the gap part. And I'll expand on the topic. And then the second is, when we're in that gap space, how do we sustain enthusiasm? Okay, that's our topic. I'm going to, we'll go here. It's real small, but I can read it. This is a section from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description. There's some newer people here, so I'm going to go slowly because some of the terminology is new to you. So there's a book that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote that expands on the six and the six. The six factors that destroy bhakti and the six factors that enhance bhakti. Nectar of instruction. Shadbir bhaktir prasidyati. Six things that prasidyati help one come to the stage of perfection. And six things that shadbir bhaktir vinashyati. It destroys. Can destroy the progress of bhakti, the growth of devotion in your heart. So one of them is this one. Niyama agraha. So here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur is expanding on this particular of the six that destroy niyama agraha. Niyama agraha, too much attachment to, or too much neglect of, rules and regulations. And here's some part of his explanation. This is towards the beginning. Niyamas, they're the rule, the do's, are of two kinds. Vidhis, that's what you're supposed to do, and nishadas, that's what you're not supposed to do, the do's and the don'ts. The Ashtanga yoga system has them also. Generally they're not taught. Just go and do, you know, yoga asanas, bring your yoga mat and do yoga asanas. But it starts with the do's and the don'ts, if it's taught properly. So bhakti also has its do's and its don'ts. Whatever is enjoined as one's duty, that's the what you're supposed to do part, is the prescribed rule. Whatever is enjoined as restricted is a prohibited or prohibitive rule. Both kinds of rules are auspicious for the living entities. Now here's the critical part. That's why it's in big letters. Conditioned souls, that's us in case you didn't know. Conditioned souls are eligible to attain a very exalted position. That's called progress. Up to the stage of perfection from a very low position. Then comes the gap. Between these two positions, there are many other positions. Each position is a gradual step. Each gradual step is a distinct level of advancement. Each and every gradual step has different prescriptions and prohibitions. See the logic of what he's doing? Whenever a living entity steps on one level and stays there, he is obliged to follow the prescriptions and prohibitions of that stage. By following those enjoined prescriptions and prohibitions, one becomes eligible to attain the next step. If one is unable to attain the next step, he falls down to a lower step. This is called degradation. Attaining the higher step is called advancement. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? So there's a dialectic or a tension between performing what's prescribed, recognizing what our position is, acknowledgement, honoring, being aware and accepting our position, and functioning according to one's position. There's prescriptions and prohibitions for each position. And that the attention is going to the next step. So there's two things: follow properly, but don't jump prematurely. But as one becomes qualified by following something, qualifications come to go to the next step. I didn't lose anybody yet. Okay. Because this is a ground upon which we're going to build a house and then, you know, put a roof on it and, you know, things. So make sure the foundation is clear. Just like Krishna said to Uddhava, we'll come back to that verse, because in this Bhaktyaloka, this commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's one of the places that refers to that verse spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. There's the verse. Steadiness. That's, you go to a step and you perform the rules and the prohibitions. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety. Whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. So here's the verse that follows that one. Krishna says, O saintly Uddhava, in order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper, you know, to be done, and improper, not to be done among all material things, including time, space, and all physical objects. There's a framework for us to progress. We need to know where we're at. The Sanskrit term is adhikar. Adhikar. Adhikar means qualification. And according to one's adhikar or qualification, one is with self-honesty on this step. Let's say someone's just beginning, then you can do something that a beginner will do. You read and take prasadam and come to the assembly and hear, and maybe you begin. The next is somebody gives you some beads and you start chanting on beads, and maybe you're not so regular and then you become regular. It's like that. You just step by step. Step by step, step by step, according to qualification. That's on the spiritual activity side. Then this is indicating regulations of material activities side by side. So we chant Hare Krishna and we follow certain rules and regulations, how we conduct ourselves. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about these two verses from Canto 11, Chapter 21. He says, the level of a person's spiritual eligibility, this is now spiritual eligibility, and spiritual application are the source of his good qualities. When he acts beyond his eligibility, then all his activities are faulty. It's in a box for a reason. It's because there's a distinction between the material aspects of our life and the inner, you could say, spiritual qualification, spiritual adhikar. And the spiritual adhikar and the application of our spiritual activities, according to that spiritual adhikar, generates, or is the basis, the support for qualities, spiritual qualities. You with me? Krishna, in nectar devotion, is a nice example. We have a statement, there's six principal qualities of a devotee. There's actually so many. But 26 principal. And of those principal qualities, one is called Swarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic, and all the others are down here, they're secondary characteristics. And the secondary ones are exhibited naturally on the strength of the primary one. And the primary one is Krishna Ekasharana. Just like we have a fan and a light fixture, and we have, it's all supported by something attached to the ceiling. If it wasn't attached to the ceiling, the whole thing comes crashing down and it's useless. But the other parts of what the fan and the light fixture does is dependent upon the, being connected up there, that little place at the ceiling. Similarly, in our devotional service, our shelter taking in Krishna is the basis of whatever spiritual quality any one of us may have. And spiritual quality. Supposing somebody isn't a devotee. There may be a couple people out there that aren't. And supposing they're really good singers. Can they sing? So that's a gift given by Krishna, but it doesn't yield a spiritual result unless it's connected to the surrender into Krishna part. Yes? So here there's spiritual qualifications, and according to spiritual qualifications there's appropriate services that one may do according to spiritual qualification. And then there's the material side of one's life. We have our psychophysical nature. and according to psychophysical nature. They'll say, you know, I'm a sannyasi. It's not who I am. Lord Chaitanya taught us that. Kiba vipra, kiba nyasi, shudra kene noi. Not who I am. Now he was a sannyasi, but he said, I'm not a sannyasi. If he's not a sannyasi, who is he? He's the servant of the servant of the servant. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalyor Dasa Das Anudas. That's who he is. And that's who we are. That's our spiritual identity. But then there's some other kind of temporary, you know, conditioned soul identity. It's a nice example of this. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you may know this, he took a vow that he would chant, what was it, 3 billion names? And he did that in a period of 9 years, something like that. And every day, some of us chant 16 rounds. He chanted 3 times 64 rounds every day for 9 years. Now we have our japa retreats and, you know, we got all ramped up and we chant 64 rounds on a day. Wow. He chanted 3 times 64 rounds every day for 9 years. He was Superman. Who can do that? Do you know anybody that can do that? I don't know anybody that can do that. I know people that chant a lot of rounds, but not that. So, in other words, he demonstrated by practical conduct, what to speak of the other aspects of his character, that he was on a transcendental platform, completely transcendental platform. And he came down from the transcendental platform on the instruction of his father. Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj and Bhaktivinoda Thakur both requested him, take the message of Lord Chaitanya and give it to the world. So he took sannyas. And it was purposeful because the Goswamis, they didn't take sannyas. They were Babajis. They were not of any ashram. They were beyond ashram. They were in the spiritual, you know, category, with no obligation at all to do these worldly duties. He placed himself within the category of worldly duties as a sannyasi to preach, but it was purposeful. Not just he could preach without that, but it was to demonstrate, you know, subjugating oneself to the codes of theistic conduct indicated by scripture. And one of the sannyasi's duties, primary duty, is to travel and give the message, to study and to present the teachings, receive the teachings and give the teachings of pure devotion. So he did that within the Varnashram system, as if he was one of us, although he had already demonstrated very clearly he wasn't. In contrast, his father was also beyond worldly designation, but he took the ashram of a family man. And how many children did he have? 10 children. Some of you may have 1 child, 2 children. Oh my goodness. 10. And on top of that, so many other things. High court judge, which meant social obligation and all the other things that go with, you know, a government post. And he exhibited transcendental character and quality. So it's not, there's the external and the internal. That's what's on this screen here. Our topic is, there's a gap between where we are and where we want to be, where we know that's like, that's the place to be. That's the goal. And there's a gap. So the top part is Krishna's instruction as given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, step by step, move according to our qualification. And then there's a spiritual qualification, which we should also move according to, and that's more internal. Now, here's qualifications for progressing in Bhagavat Dharma. You know, that's what we do, devotional service. And interestingly, it's just in the previous chapter. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava in chapter 20. This is quoted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this section. Having awakened faith, this is really nice. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee remains happy and worships me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows, repeating what was above, all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. You with me? So here's where we are, here's where we want to be, and there's this big gap, and we're moving towards where we want to go, recognizing with knowledge from scripture and practical experience in life and instructions from our Prabhupada's books and so many things, sense gratification leads to misery. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukkha means distress. Dukkha yonaya evate. Every time, because that's the design. It's an infallible design. It never fails. Dukkha yonaya evate. The birthplace, the womb of distress, is the anticipation of happiness by bringing the senses to some sense object and thinking, ah. And the anticipation of happiness through that activity is the birthplace of distress. And that's the world where we live. So even when one knows that, and there's some taste for hearing topics about Krishna, such a person doesn't resent what the higher standard is. They don't, oh, poo-poo, who can do that? That's for, you know, storybook people. Let's get real. Kind of rationalization and, you know what I mean. You've maybe heard that kind of talk. So no resentment of what the higher standard is, being self-honest what one's present position is, and carrying on with the shelter-taking Bhagavad Dharma. These are qualifications for progressing from one position to the next position, along with following vidhis that are according to my position, even maybe slipping sometimes. But regretting that slipping, not like, okay, I guess it's okay because I'm chanting Hare Krishna and I'm trying and I'm a nice person. No rationalizing. So here's the little summary of how to progress. Just little items. Self-honesty, recognize our position, at least in the classes that I've been participating in. How do we know what our position is? Well, scripture says, and you have people guiding you to say, and we have, you know, we have the means, if we're willing to be honest with what our position is and recognize it. Then, don't pretend that you're something that you're not to others or to yourself. No self-delusion, no deception of others. So, you know, transparent self-honesty. Maintain your position with honesty. And you know what the goal is. I'm not there, but I know what the goal is. And without being complacent or lazy, I'm going to strive to attain the goal, but I'm not going to try to do it in some quantum thing that's not sustainable. Some incremental steps. It's one of my favorite teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's something that I certainly live my life by. I'll say it again and again and again. Many of you heard it again and again. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, progress is, because this is progress is one of our topics, isn't it? Acceptance and progress. Progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. Pretty simple definition. You have to know where you are, you have to know what the direction is, and take little steps, small steps in the right direction. You don't have to run. You can run, but you don't have to run. You can just move in the right direction, step by sustained, exactly what the text described, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Keep those vidhis for some time. Maintain them nicely. Do them very nicely. And you'll get purification, and you'll get strength, and you'll get awakening of inspiration, enthusiasm. You take another step, according to some indication of the teachings and those guiding you and so forth, and another step. Knowing what, you know, scripturally, not like whimsically or subjectively or capriciously, but in a guided way, and then another sustainable step, and then another sustainable step, and another sustainable step. For this one, I have a visual image, and I don't think there's anybody here in this room that was with us. Some years ago, we had a little gathering, a retreat kind of thing, in north of Seattle, in a place that we went to for a retreat because it was said 360 days of the year, it's sunny. It rained the 2 days that we were there. And when we went there, you look out and there's the ocean, and you look over the ocean, it looks like there's a mountain coming out of the ocean. So I asked the devotees, what's that? I said, oh, that's Vancouver Island. So from a place in the state of Washington, you can see Vancouver Island, but it looked like, you know, a mountain coming out of the ocean. And then there's this little, like, you know, only one person, not two people side by side, one person can walk on a little narrow strip of land that kind of curls around something like Cape Cod, except it's really narrow. Only one person at a time. They don't have a nice name for it. They call it a spit. S-P-I-T. And at the end of that spit, there's a lighthouse. Real tall lighthouse. And up on top is a guy that, you know, is probably bored stiff and runs. So Bhakti Marg Swami was with us. You know what Bhakti Marg Swami means. You got to go for a walk, right? During the 50th anniversary celebration of Prabhupada, he's going to walk from Boston to California. I don't think he's going to walk back again, just one way. And stop along the way and hold, you know, Prabhupada 50th, you know, like that. So he had to go walk that spit. And so a group of devotees went. And as they started walking, it started getting dark. So what do? You're walking, practically you're walking out in the middle of the ocean. You know, go to the left and go to the right a little bit and you're in the ocean. So they just followed the light of the lighthouse. You with me? Just follow the light of the lighthouse and you'll get there. I don't know how it worked when they came back because there wasn't a lighthouse on this end. But just follow the light. You know what the goal is? You know, it's supposing you're in a ship and it's stormy and it's at nighttime and the waves are moving and the boat's going woo and there's the lighthouse. And the wind's blowing, it blows you this way and blows you that. Just keep following the light. You'll get there. Step by step by step. Just be very clear what the goal is. Don't be resentful of what the goal is. Pure devotion, oh, impossible. Don't be resentful. Know what the goal is. Know where you are. Know what the standards are to get there, and get there. Just a little step at a time. That's how to close the gap. Now, we speak about this in japa retreats. There's like, we know what the description is of chanting the pure holy name. We know what kind of chanting we, it's not that. So there's this big gap between what we know and where we are. It's the same thing. It's a willingness to take step, not try to pretend or something, but take step by step. That's the recommendation given to us. And that's the little section of Krishna's instruction to Uddhava. And it's a wonderful section, very rich, long, extensive discussion. Now, when we're in that gap place, we're making some steps, we need enthusiasm. How do we sustain enthusiasm? Because we could, you know, get distracted or get discouraged, or all kinds of things can happen. Like one of the things that happens at events like this, kind of the end, people say, oh, it was such a nice experience. How can I keep that same experience and same enthusiasm? So that's the question. And for reference, we're going to look at, again, same book. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking about the six principles that enhance bhakti. Shabir Bhakti Prasidhyati. And one of them is enthusiasm. It's the first one, actually. Utsahan is the Sanskrit. So he writes, when utsaha is generated, first he says, well, if it's not there, here's what it looks like. And then he says, when it is there, laziness and inertia, because those are what happens when you're not enthusiastic, they cannot remain. The absence of desire to work is inertia, lazy. This inertia is opposite to the nature of spirit. If one allows this inertia to remain, then how can he perform devotional service? And then there's another one, apathy. I don't care. So he says, apathy develops from carelessness. Have anybody had the experience? Probably very few of you, but if you chant inattentively and it gets to be the kind of chanting that's like mechanical and this kind of like, oh boy, it's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls the counting game. You know that one. Carelessness is the cause of apathy. Apathy develops from carelessness. So there's an antidote to carelessness. It's carefulness or attentiveness. For those who have attained indifference for material activities, but have not yet realized spiritual activities, what can remain in their hearts besides indifference? You're in that gap between, well, I know material activities, it's not what it was supposed to be. I want to get out of this place. But I'm not yet in the spiritual activities place. I'm in the gap place. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in that gap place, it's very easy. It's like default. That there's in the heart, one feels indifference, even towards the spiritual activities. So here's a longer and a nice print. In Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas, carelessness, which is the cause of apathy, remember, is counted among the offenses against the holy name. In that scripture, the word pramada is described as inattentiveness. By the way, pramada literally means mad, like cuckoo, that kind of mad. Not angry mad, but cuckoo kind of mad. So one who is inattentive when chanting the holy name, cuckoo. And it's an offense against the holy name. Sri Hari Nama Chintamani, that's another book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by the way, he's just referencing it in this writing, has further divided this inattentiveness in three ways. Here they are: apathy, inactivity, and distraction are the three types of inattentiveness. Until one gets free from these three types of inattentiveness, one cannot perform devotional service at all. Anyone inattentive? You know those passages where it says, and then devotional service began. So this is like sandbox. You know, little league. Batting practice or something, you know, we're like getting some training how to do what real devotional service is. Even if one gives up all other nama parads, if he is still inattentive, he can never have attraction for the holy names. If one has enthusiasm in the beginning of devotional service and that enthusiasm does not become cold, then one will never become apathetic, lazy, or distracted in chanting the holy names. Therefore, enthusiasm is the only support for all types of devotional service. By enthusiastically performing devotional service, one can give up unsteady, for those of you that don't know the term, anishtata, and come to steady devotional service. Just by this one little secret ingredient, enthusiasm. And we're almost done. There's something that helps sustain enthusiasm, and without it, enthusiasm won't sustain. And the answer to that one is, there must be a spiritual conception. Because one can be like ramped up in the mode of passion, and then fizzles. It's not sustainable. The spiritual conception of life, however, is therefore sustainable. Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes Bhagavad Gita 6:23, where with determination and faith, it's not deviated. So it brings freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith and not be deviated from the path. He quotes Baladeva Vidyabhusan's commentary where he says, one becomes indifferent to whatever work he feels unqualified for. So there's the worldly indifference and there's spiritual indifference. We want not the former, not the latter. And the latter will take care of the former. What is called yoga, chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, what is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. What that means is, be enthusiastic. Strive to be enthusiastic in devotional activity, especially in chanting. And one of the reasons we have functions like this is by coming together, wait till the kirtan happens. And it's, wow, wait till the next kirtan. And absorb yourself in the present kirtan. And that leads to the material side is just detachment. It's not my adhikar for being an enjoyer of matter. As Krishna can enjoy whatever he wants to enjoy, my adhikar is to be situated in devotional service to Krishna. Where there's spiritual qualification, the material indifference follows. And then he writes, for those who have attained indifference for material activities, but have not yet realized spiritual activities, you saw this before, what can remain in their hearts besides indifference? And this is the conclusion. Sambandhagyan, or understanding the spiritual conception of what's what. is essential. So we spend time studying and hear Prabhupada speaking and writing on what's what, sambandha gyan. Out of the essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya, 8 of them are just that. 7 of them. So it's essential to have a spiritual conception in order to progress in spiritual life. Converse, without a spiritual conception, one isn't going to progress in spiritual life very nicely. Like running with a ball and chain on your ankle. You won't get very far. And these are some nice teachings given by Krishna to Uddhava, who's at his feet over there, and Maitreya is also listening. And we're hearing these by the grace of our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, sharing some of these thoughts with you. So, the 8 o'clock bell is ringing, I'm over. Any comments first or so? We do have a portable microphone, right?
Sorry, I have some space.
Maharaj, I understand that according to one's material position of what varna or what ashram they're in, that there will be particular and unique do's and don'ts for those particular varnas and ashrams.
Correct.
But then it was said that depending on what stage of spiritual advancement one is on as one's trying to close that gap, that one's going through different stages of spiritual, you know, advancement. I assume that means the 9 stages from Shraddha to Prema or whatever.
Like that. That's one barometer.
Could you please give some examples
of... I was hoping you would ask that question.
...specific rules and regulations that would be different on one stage of spiritual advancement from another stage of spiritual advancement?
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't... I don't recall. Jai Jagannath is very familiar with that section. Does he give examples in that section?
He describes bhakti in 4 stages, Shraddha, Nishtha, Rushi, and Asakti. But I don't recall if he gives details of each stage.
Does that work for you, Donna Kelly? It's the reference is from this section, the stages of, because it's a long paragraph that I didn't include because it's, you know, It's here in the purport of this that we chant karma. You know, the yoga ladder. That's the indication of the stages of spiritual qualification. Now, it's not the varna and ashram one, or one who's within the varna or ashram. What are different regulations? I mean, here's one that just comes to mind as an example. Those that are in the Brahmana order may take sannyas according to Varnashram system. Those that are Kshatriyas don't take the order of sannyas, but they go to the forest and renounce without the formal sannyas stage. There's an example. Yes, and that, isn't that what you asked? Okay. Well, the spiritual qualification is as he said. The level of detachment and therefore the level of connection with the Supreme through the stages of the yoga ladder.
I'm just wondering what would be rules and regulations that are different from all of us. I'm just kind of having a hard time giving an example.
Well, the emphasis for a person who is following Gyan Yoga is not so much the rituals for the observer of karmakanda activities. They may neglect those and instead invest their time in another set. Study of Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads and rigidly observing austerities and other types of vidhis for that practice, that stage of ritual practice. Here's an example. Someone else? Yes.
Maharaj, as I understand, you said progress is taking small steps in the right direction. And you also stated that one should be steady in one's position.
Yes, it's a dialectic. It's a seeming contradiction, but it's not. While I'm in this stage, I must be steady and observe what is appropriate for this stage. Meanwhile, as I'm steadying myself and becoming purified and awakened further in spiritual inspiration and enthusiasm, I'm looking to the next stage, but not prematurely, so that I'm anticipating going forward. I'm not stagnant. I'm not complacent. But I'm not artificially jumping either, progressing step by step. Before you let me qualify myself like this for some time before I go to the next step. But I want to go the next step. But I want to go qualified to the next step. Does that address your question?
I will follow up. So when do we decide we have to take the next step?
You ask the persons who are guiding you in Krishna consciousness. And if you don't have somebody, find somebody. A qualified somebody. Over here. One can be too attached, yeah. You want some example of that? Yeah. The message with that one is, it's just too attached, thinking the essence is the rule rather than the purpose behind the rule. Not understanding the purpose behind the rule, just being rule conscious. And the rule is everything, without understanding the purpose. Now let me think of some example. Well, you've been around the temple for a while, so you probably bumped into it a few times. People that instruct you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do that, take your shoes off, don't put your bead bag there, and don't do this, and don't do that. You've got some of that stuff? Of course, okay. Did that answer your question? Okay. Jai Jagannath, do you have something?
I was still thinking about Mother Donna Kelly's question.
Okay.
And
you're going to offer an answer, or you're going to ask another question?
Like a mix. Okay. I'm going to ask about certain literatures. I was thinking of the Madhurya Kandambini, the Sri Shastrakam and the Bhajana Rahasya Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which doesn't exactly give rules of each stage, but more describes like symptoms.
Yes.
By which a person could recognize that he's on a particular stage.
Donna Kelly, you with us?
It doesn't seem to exactly delineate a rule, because the rule is very simple to remember Krishna. And it's just kind of like the intensity in which you're doing
a maturing stage of that.
A mature stage of that. So then it just seems like, yeah, this is more just to help us recognize at what level of remembrance we're actually at in those literatures. It doesn't exactly give rules like you must remember Krishna in this particular sort of way. It doesn't seem like that as such. So I was just kind of off contributing that to that discussion.
Here's one that comes to mind. When I was a very new devotee, living in a temple, And the temple president said, we're preparing something for the children, could you make the offering? And I said, I'm not even initiated, you know, how can I make the offering? And he got on my case and said, where does it say you have to be initiated to make an offering? You know, you offer with love and devotion and Krishna will accept. So I did what he said. At the same time, I don't have the eligibility to, as an uninitiated devotee, to go on the altar and make an offering to the deities. So I have another set of procedures according to my position. And then one follows according to that position. Or some of you have in your home, you invited deities into your home, and the standard of the deity worship in your home is more relaxed than the standard of the deity worship in the temple. Some people do like an amazing standard in their home, but commonly that's the case. There's some example like that. You had? Yeah. Okay, but it's really up to you.
Maharaj, my question is regarding self-evaluation.
Regarding?
Self-evaluation. This one part of it, like, you're always trying to catch up with the rules and regulations. There is always a fall down. So there is like a continuous feeling of not able to keep up.
Slipping with the standard that you know you should maintain? Is that what your point
is? Yes,
yes.
There is a like a progress and the fall down. So there is always a feeling of humility that I'm always trying to progress and coming down. So
okay, well that's called anishtata. You know the term?
No.
Steady and unsteady. Unsteady is what you described. Sine curve. Unsteady. It's standard. Welcome to the club. And there's a way to go from unsteady to steady. Described here. Does that help?
Yes, Maharaj. It's like the evaluation, it's like a continuous process. Like
yes.
When you go up, you feel like you're progressing, and then you come down.
But then it tells you that go up and come down. That's part of my stage. It's up and down. And how big is the amplitude up and down? And how far down? It's unsteady of this amplitude, the sine curve that has this kind of an arc to it, and then progressively, so it goes like this. The amplitude diminishes as one progresses, and the axis starts to go up as one progresses.
Thank you so much.
There'll still be a little, you know, some unsteadiness as one is, but less. More steady, and then steady. And even with steady, there's some nashta prayeshu, abhadreshu. Prayeshu means almost. Praye nak prayu shakshabhya. Kalabhasman yugejana, that verse from the Bhagavatam that says, good qualities are in the age of Kali are almost destroyed. So, even when steadiness is there, there's still some residual effect or some bhadra, some contamination. So it says diminish as contamination diminishes, as one becomes purified, the amplitude diminishes. You know, the amplitude becomes flatter. Is that all right?
Yes, ma'am. So that point is considered like you're ready to go to the next step. So that's like
something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Take guidance before you jump. One question over here and we're done. And then we'll have... So can you get ready with the kirtan?
Guru Maharaj, I had exactly the same question as Danakeli Mataji, but then in my mind, I kind of reconciled the answer in this way, that that overall, like in the different stages of bhakti, because they come in so many different flavors and different varieties of stages and depending on life situations. So what actually, in my mind, what actually defines the set of rules and regulations for one's particular stage is basically dependent on whether one is taking guidance or not. So if one is taking guidance, then automatically, based on that, that specific rules and regulations get clarified, and then we can make gradual progress.
But she's looking for examples of that. Can you give some examples of that, was her question.
I mean, from that point of view, that one example I can think of is like, if I am like a working person, and while at the same time I'm trying to integrate the process of Krishna consciousness, so there are certain attachments associated with my own particular occupation, and therefore understanding my own set of attachments by carefully evaluating them, I receive particular kind of guidance to either accept something or reject something, and based on that, if I operate on those instructions, then I can make incremental progress.
That's the how-to, but she's asking for a what? We got a lot of hands going up over it, but he beat you. He beat you to it. Sorry, check it out.
Could you get the microphone?
Run over there. Run over there.
Okay.
Before the stage of Nishtha and Ruchi, so like Bhajan Kriya Anarjanavritti stage,
yes,
then it's more clear what the rules might be, accepting a spiritual master, studying of the shastras in order to improve our faith, etc. Those types of, the rules are more clear before the stage of Nishtha and Ruchi, but after Nishtha, especially after Ruchi, spiritual life becomes very particularized, it seems, more individualized, the devotional expressions start manifesting themselves in a very specific sort of way.
However, the vidhis are still in place.
Yeah, I was thinking the vidhis, the main vidhi, of course, is just to remember Krishna, and that's what we're...
And then there's means to remember Krishna, and one may be partial to, but for even for edification or example setting of others, Krishna says to Arjuna, on the stage of perfection, you'll still follow the vidhis. You'll still set the proper example. Now, I'm supposed to make two announcements, and then we're going to end.